everyone, and welcome back to another Bite. Jory and Ariel here. In today's episode, we have a super special guest. We have Charlie Cannon, who's the founder behind VibeRide. In case you missed it, VibeRide was featured on season 15, episode 10 of Shark Tank. Now, VibeRide is an innovative solution for literally pumping the brakes. It's a skateboard braking system and an alternative to save your soles of your shoes, that is. So, Charlie, welcome. How you doing today?
Hello, I'm good. I'm super stoked to talk to you guys.
So I'm going to dive right in. Going to start with some heavy hitting questions. So one thing that we've heard from founders that we've interviewed in the past is that it can kind of be nerve wracking, right? To go on and have that whole experience of Shark Tank. But you told our producer that actually you weren't nervous at all going into the tank because you had done a few unusual things to prepare. So can you tell us about the process that you went through as you were preparing to go on Shark Tank and like not be nervous?
Yeah, for sure. So I think I realized right before that the only thing that would really get in the way of this performance was being scared. Mm-hmm. That if I was nervous, that's what would unravel this. But in terms of like them asking questions about the business, for the most part, if you have a half decent business, you should have really already asked yourself those questions. Mm-hmm. I was so nervous coming into it. And I would just go into these deep meditative states trying to visualize what it might look like and what it would feel like. You know, I'm visualizing being on stage and I'm freaking out. Mm-hmm. But I think after enough, just kind of picture, okay, what might it feel like to not be nervous? And then really just memorizing that feeling. It worked. I felt no nerves and I felt exactly how I prepared to feel.
That's amazing. So essentially you like manifested what you imagined that the pitch would look like.
Yeah, everything went perfectly. The questions they asked, we prepared for every type of question on earth and got asked none of them. In terms of getting $250,000, it was the easiest I've ever seen.
As you were thinking about how you were going to structure your pitch, how did you start to pull together that story of your brand so that you went in knowing that you were going to like resonate with the sharks?
Yeah. So I think that there's kind of two ways to go about it. There's one way to be like a commercial, like a scrub daddy, like I'm going on Shark Tank, I'm going to make a big stink. Sure. And then there's how we did it, which was like, this is an investor meeting and I don't care about the cameras. I don't care about how we look. I'm completely forgetting about the fact that it's going to be on TV. Like Mark Cuban is one of the most influential people in the world and I want him on our team. So I'm going to show him why fundamentally, it's a good business at a good price, why you should invest, and hopefully I can make him some money. Mm-hmm. Unless the systems are in place to make a profitable business, we could have this big night of sales. Great. Then what? And I heard that from Mark's team as well, that some of the companies that have crushed it on Premiere have gone on to fail, and some that just did terribly on Premiere have gone on to be really successful. So yeah, hopefully we'll be one of the second ones.
You can always hope. So say Ariel and I are going on Shark Tank tomorrow and we're phoning you as a friend being like, I don't know, we're really nervous, Charlie. Like, what should we do to be preparing? Like, what would be those like 3 to 5 strategies of like, all right, you're going into that investor meeting, you know, you need to impress them. And maybe actually you want to start to pave the way for more of a longer term relationship with those investors, not just like that one-off investment piece. What would be your recommendation for us in how to approach a meeting like that?
First of all, it's going to be kind of hard to make a long-term relationship with those people.
For sure.
The way I describe it, if you're nervous, and what worked for me is think about when you first got your entrepreneurial dream. You're going to go on Shark Tank. You'd be freaking out. Like the 12-year-old you would be like, oh my gosh, we made it to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So I think just like appreciating that moment and just being like, you're on Shark Tank. Just don't worry about it too much and really just go try to have fun.
Charlie mentioned that you envision like 12-year-old Charlie and like entrepreneurship. I'm just very curious, like at what age for you did you kind of like start feeling like you were leaning more into like that path, or you're like, hey, I kind of want to like start businesses or like putz around with things? Like, was it around that age for you?
Yeah, that's really funny. My first memory of it My grandma was still in her original house, which means I was less than the age of 5. It was always just like, I cannot work for someone.
Like, even at the age of 5. Like,
spirits crushed at a young age.
Yeah.
True. But yeah. I can't envision it. It just didn't make sense to me. I remember looking at my dad. It was like, wait, see, like, you don't get summer when you're an adult? Like, you just work all the time. Like, when's the break? Like, it just didn't quite add up. So it was like, all right, I just can't work for someone. But when I turned like 16 and I started doing summer jobs, that's when I really realized like, okay, I hate this. I think a lot of entrepreneurs will say that too. And it's just like a common theme that everyone's like, I'm just an entrepreneur. Like, I just can't work for someone. And anything can be learned. You know, I don't think you need to have that innate drive of like, if you're looking at this and you're 30 and it was like, you know, I've always kind of wanted to do this. Like, yeah, go for it. Send it. But I definitely had that kind of rebellious gene, you know.
Since 4, I'm not going to work for the man.
Having some existential thoughts at 4. Yes.
Okay, so you're 16 then. How did you start to actually translate that from like, I want to be an entrepreneur to I'm actually going to start a business, right? Because it seems like you had some really early success as well.
Yeah, it's funny that I have really early success because I have a video on my phone. And it probably seems a little crazy saying that age, but I was like, you are about to turn 20 in 10 days. You have absolutely nothing to show for yourself besides like some stupid movie.
Oh my gosh.
No, it was a really, really dark time because I had tried so much and I genuinely felt like everywhere I looked was a dead end. Mm-hmm. And there were people on the internet making this kind of money. I remember when I was 16, there were people winning the Olympics and I'm just like, I'm genuinely not where I want to be. And literally a day after recording that video, I had like my first profitable day ever. And then that business turned into, you know, a monumental success when I was 19. But I started doing videography and tried to be a social media influencer and that didn't work. And I tried a video business and like I got some clients, but that didn't really work. And then I spent 2 years of my life making a movie, like every single day for 2 years, traveling the world and trying to do a bucket list travel life. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work either. No one watched it. And it was like, oh my gosh. So when I discovered e-commerce when I was 19, it really made sense. E-commerce of like buy something on the internet on one part of it, sell it on another part of the internet with a logo for more and take the profit. And someone was like, you can just do this for 2 years. You will make it work. And it was like, okay, 2 years. I just made a movie for 2 years and I got nothing out of it. So you tell me like, I'll get my dream life if I just really work at this for 2 years straight. They always say like, it takes years to become an overnight success. Mm-hmm. So it might look and it looks to my friends and people around me like, oh my gosh, you just came out of nowhere. Like, no, I've been literally trying to start a business since I was 10. When my aunt was like, oh, you're going to be an entrepreneur? Well, what business are you going to start? And I was like, dang it. Like, good question. I don't know.
Put me on the spot, auntie.
Yeah, for real.
It sounds like you've had like a ton of ideas in the past. When you're thinking about business ideas or like the next thing to lean into, how do you know when you want to double down and focus on scaling a business versus like pivoting to something else? It seems like it's a delicate balance a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think what's so important is not doing too many things. Mm. It's so funny you say that because I have a note on my phone where I just write down all my business
ideas.
Everyone
has a book, something, yeah.
Yeah, and I have a bajillion business ideas and they're all just great, but like I'm not going to do any of them. I think analyzing all the opportunities and then kind of multiplying the odds of success times the potential gain and see which one's the highest and go for that. In terms of like pivoting and stuff, and it sounded like I did a lot of that. I think, yeah, I have. And it was really important for me to know that like, I am here for the money. My dream job is to work for no one. I don't really care what type of business I'm in. I'm here because I want financial freedom. So whatever is going to bring me that, I'm willing to grind through. Skateboards are totally my passion for sure. But like, I'm not doing it because I want to ride skateboards every day. I'm doing it because I know the industry and I think that's my best chance of making money.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's almost like a bit of a Charlie equation, right? In some ways, what do you think has like the most profitability? What do you think will actually like lead you towards money? What's something that's like interest? Is there any other factors that you consider?
Am I good at it?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that leads into the chances of profitability.
And it sounds like a big part of the Charlie equation is like an entrepreneur needs to really understand what's driving them, right? Because we've seen on certain pitches too that like sometimes it is their dream to have that company and that is their dream job. But for you, it is that profitability because that allows you to accomplish your dream. So I think entrepreneurs really need to understand why they're in the game. And if that's unclear, the rest of the equation kind of like falls apart.
Yeah, you put that really well. That some people definitely do come in and they're like, it's my dream to make this work. Mm-hmm. My dad wanted this product. Yeah, but then you get hooligans like me, like, oh, I just want to be rich.
But that's okay, right? Like, if that's your dream, that's normal, right? Like, that's okay.
I feel like it's very aligned to what investors think too. Mm-hmm. A lot of investors come from that mindset. What's going to give us the most money? What are the areas that I shine in versus not? Maybe not hooliganish.
No, like that's how they evaluate their portfolio. Like that is just like a very real economics of business perspective for sure.
Yeah.
So you've gained this momentum. You've drilled down on this idea. And this has sort of brought you to VibeRide, right? And going back to VibeRide for a little bit and your Shark Tank experience, when you went into the tank, it seemed like you really wanted Mark Cuban. Like it seemed like you were really gunning for that partnership specifically. How far in advance, once you knew that you were going to be on Shark Tank, did you identify Mark as like your ideal investor? And like what went into that decision?
Well, I think that we decided on Mark long before Shark Tank.
Okay.
Honestly, like you can't do that much in this business.
Sure.
I just want Mark for my next one, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
For sure. Okay.
I really want that level of status to come into a truly world-changing idea mm-hmm. that like, could we make in a best case scenario, like a $100 million rideables company right now, like a Razor? Like, yeah, that is totally in the cards. It's not flipping that way right now, but it's great to have him for this, but I really just wanted that connection of like, you know, this is a guy who's talking about running for president of the United States. And honestly, I think he'd have a pretty good chance at winning if he did. I want to know that guy. And we made it very clear to everyone on that stage, we wanted Mark. I'm not super good at hiding my hand there. And I think I was just looking at him the entire time, talking to him, mm-hmm. watching back the tape. We could tell that Damon and Lori, who were on the other side of the stage, really didn't like us very much by the end of it mm-hmm. because they could tell I was just not interested in
it. Really just subtle cues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually sent Mark an email like 10 days before going on. I was like, Mark, we're going to be the best investment you've ever made. Like, better invest in us. And he definitely read it. Like 30 seconds into the pitch, he's like, oh, it's those guys.
I love that idea of like warming the waters mm-hmm. a little bit. So that way you're like front of mind when you do get like that time with him. So it's less of like, hey, getting to know you and more of like getting to know like the potential of what you could do together. That's like a really cool strategy.
Okay. So it was like reaching out to an hiring manager for a job, right? Where it's like you want to build that relationship before there's that important moment. Do you think that that's a strategy you'd recommend to like other entrepreneurs, that you should always warm the waters first before the meeting? What would you advise people do if they want to build that like Mark Cuban-esque relationship?
I think that there's no shame in like going above and beyond. Mm-hmm. One time I was hiring at my last company, and there was someone I wasn't that interested in hiring, but he just kept reaching out to me like, hey, Charlie, just following up, seeing how you are. Hey, Charlie, like really interested following up. And I was like, you know what? This guy is writing very professional emails. He's really kind. You can tell he really wants it. Let me talk to him some more. So I talked to him some more and he was awesome. When it comes to the email with Mark, I can't condone everyone doing that because I genuinely meant it, what I was saying.
Fair.
Of just like, seriously, Mark, like, I don't know if we're going to have the time for you to understand this when we're on stage or if we're going to blow it or anything, but we are truly sending it. And like, we are going for the top of the top and we want to be with you. I wouldn't want to fake that if I were someone else.
That's fair.
If I were someone else really worried about making a deal with someone and you can't honestly justify this with facts and knowledge and what you think, just ask for less money. If you really want to make a deal, stop trying to negotiate like a crazy term. So it really means a lot to you to get a shark, like just slash the valuation. That's something we did, that we were looking at similar companies and we probably, a lot of similar ones would ask for like double what we did, mm-hmm. but we want to seem reasonable and not come in with that we start high, they go low, meet in the middle. We're just like, we're going to do something genuinely fair. And I said to him on stage, it wasn't in the show, but it was like, honestly, there's not many people on earth that I would give this valuation to. Like, I know what you guys bring to the table. And then all said and done, Mark gives us exactly what we asked for. So playing all those games of like, go high, go low, you know, it's just kind of silly. I think just like genuinely be reasonable.
So one thing that you mentioned is hiring. You were on stage with your friends slash like co-founders slash, you know, your dream team. How did you have that balance between like genuine friendship and like business when something can be like a little bit more emotionally driven versus like profit driven?
Friendship comes second.
Fair. Okay.
He's like, we're all chill dudes. We focus on the business.
Yeah. No, honestly, I think someone told me really early, don't mix your friends in business. And I was like, whatever, like, you don't know me.
It is
like,
that rebellious
12-year-old Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't work. It'll ruin your friendships, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just so weird. I've hired probably like 5 or 10 of my friends over the time. It's like, when does it stop? Like, the work day at 5 p.m., it goes from, hey, take my orders to, hey, like, let's hang out as equally yoked friends. Like, it's really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. I hope they're not watching this. Like, what? I'm not my friend. Like, obviously we're friends.
Right.
But I think that what's on top of mind more frequently than how can we have the most fun together is how can we make the most money together? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes making the most money together means sacrificing the fun time.
For sure.
And if we're having fun together, it's like, why are we having fun right now? Like, we should be working. We should be doing productive stuff. So we're all super close.
Do you feel like there's any lessons or tips that you've learned in that process over time? Mm-hmm. Maybe if there are any other founders listening that are like, oh yeah, I really want to start this business with my bestie, but I'm kind of on the fence a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Family.
Family's a big one sometimes.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. Definitely don't do it.
It's just hard.
Yeah, it's a little better if you're partners.
Yeah.
Like if you genuinely have equal say in things, mm-hmm. but like you're going to become business partners and that's going to be the primary focus. Some people pull it off, but oh my gosh, never again. Starting at 2, I think hiring your friends is oftentimes an excuse for laziness to be like, wow, I don't know where to go out and hire someone with these skills. You know who's great is like Billy with that marketing. Like he had that Instagram page. Let me go hit up Billy because I know he's good at that. Rather than, okay, it's time to hire. Let me go on these hiring websites, write out a job description, do interviews. It's really a cop-out mm-hmm. in the short term when it's the most important skill you'll ever learn in business is hiring good people. I don't regret hiring my friends sure. because you have to learn this the hard way, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But you'll be hard struck to find any CEO. I've heard Sergey Brin of Google saying this, like, everyone goes through it and everyone says, do not hire your friends because they won't be your friends anymore. And it's a very limited pool of people that you'll run and dry pretty quickly.
So it sounds like it's almost worthwhile to like have someone specifically for hiring besides working on your business to like find the right people.
Yeah, definitely. Find your people from the open market for sure.
That makes sense. So one thing that you brought up is profitability. And one thing that you also mentioned earlier was you didn't get the post-tank bump that you were expecting. So could you tell us a little bit more about that and like how you prepared for the episode going live and then what you ultimately saw when the episode did go live?
Yeah, we prepared so hard. We like put so many things on the website, thought we were going to have this crazy inflow of traffic. And what ended up happening is we had around like 30,000 people visit the site, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. It was definitely our biggest day of traffic and sales so far. But, you know, it's a 7-minute segment, barely mention the product, barely mention the company. And we're selling something that boomers don't want. And that's who's watching TV. So a lot of things didn't add up for people to come to the site. And we were talking to Mark's team. It was probably the lowest site visitors of any company they've ever seen.
Really?
But that's fine. I'm chill. I don't care. I swear. Like.
But it sounds like you have an understanding that like the audience that you were reaching might not have been your target audience. So kind of expected then in that way.
Yeah, definitely. It all makes sense in hindsight.
funny. I was creeping on your guys' Instagram because I longboard and I saw the like pre-videos that you guys did to like hype up, we're going to be on Shark Tank tonight and like building some of that buzz. And I was like, man, these videos are very convincing and like selling me a little bit more than like the actual pitch itself. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I definitely think there's something there around generations and how they like consume content and where they're getting it from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be the most important for us in terms of getting sales is how can we leverage this Shark Tank to get more replies from skate shops, mm-hmm. get more partnerships, up our conversion rate on our website for all the products that we launch, get organic views on social media, that kind of thing will hopefully be more important than the actual premiere itself.
So Shark Tank may have not caused that big bump that you're expecting, but if you don't mind sharing, what are the marketing strategies or channels that you do find kind of reach that younger audience potentially that might be more interested in Vibe-Ride? Like, what are the marketing channels that get you super stoked to talk about Vibe-Ride?
Yeah, obviously social media is huge for mm-hmm. us. We do a lot of Facebook and Meta ads. Cool. Facebook is Instagram, of course, and they've definitely always had the best ad targeting. TikTok, we've tried, but the audience on TikTok really wants like $4 trinkets rather than like a informed $100 purchase. Yeah, so
sure.
Really Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube have been the places that we can reach those people. That's how we get a word out. Mm-hmm. And if we really want to sell, we should be in shops as well, because I think a lot of people purchase skateboards from those shops mm-hmm. rather than going online to get them. It's a culture thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like Ariel totally schooled me. She was like, skating is an entire culture, Jory. You don't even understand. Yep. So that makes sense. Then you'd want to be like in that point of intent if you know a lot of your buyers are like purchasing in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a future shift you all are considering to like lean more into the retail space? Because yeah, Jory, mm-hmm. to your point, I don't think I've ever bought a skateboard or a longboard besides in shop.
Well, you want to see actually, it, right? Like you want the physical part. Like that totally yeah. makes sense in
you
terms
need
of
to
what
adjust
type
the
of
bearings
product.
And stuff, like sure. get it done while you're there. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
It's one of those things like I personally, it's the last thing I want to do. Mm-hmm. I do not want to cold call skate shops and sure. sell them this board.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but it's something that we have to do. Mm-hmm. That's what you get yourself into yeah. in business.
The grind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The old quote about entrepreneurs, we escape the 9 to 5 to work 15 hours a day. So that's what we get. That's what we have to do if we want to stay alive. And we will do it.
But you don't work for someone. So the dream is there.
Right. Yeah. yeah.
You control your own schedule.
I can stay in bed yeah. if I want to.
yeah, yeah, that freedom.
I have to ask though, because you mentioned that you had your like list of potential businesses and you know, you're a little bit more flexible as you consider your business portfolio and like the long-term strategy for Vibe-Ride. What is on the horizon for you? Like, are there new innovations you're investing in Vibe-Ride? Is there another business idea that's starting to sort of tickle your fancy? Like what's on the horizon?
Yeah, for sure. I think with Vibe-Ride, I kind of mentioned becoming like a razor, and mm-hmm. I think we can do that.
Cool.
You
okay.
know, we spent years. We made like 50,000 camera drones. Mm. We're really underutilized in terms of our ability to make products. So making electric products that to be a leader in that space of like, yeah, we have our brake boards, our longboards with brakes. They're great. But we also have electric scooters, electric longboards, and electric bikes. And we just kind of become that one-stop shop with really good service, really good quality. We're direct-to-consumer primarily, so we have good prices. I think that would be a really interesting route for us to go. The whole goal of it is to make a lot of money so we can do something to help the world. Mm-hmm. Like I could just work and be comfortable my whole life. Sure. That's what like a financial advisor would tell me to do right now. Mm-hmm. But I really want to do something massive for the world, for the planet, for people. The way I look at it is I was born in Massachusetts, which happened to be the number one educated state in the richest country in the history of humankind. I'm born into a healthy, happy, nice family in a great state in the 1 out of 20 country in the world by population is your chances of being born in America. We are the first round draft picks of the world. If like we're not going to do something, no one is. I feel such an obligation that if I spend my whole life helping just me, like that is the biggest failure of a life ever. And honestly, it adds a ton of pressure and I know I could just, oh, have this nice little life mm-hmm. and go live in Hawaii or something and fade my days away. But there are so many people struggling out there, because if we're all truly the same as humans and we all feel the same emotions, if I could help 20 people have a better life, in practice, that's pretty hard to do. Mm-hmm. But I really see it as like the race is on right now, and I need to get that capital as quickly as possible so that I can do that for people. But getting the capital is hard. You really have to make a product that's better than everyone else's. That's what we're trying to do.
I love that, Charlie, because I feel like sometimes investors are a bit at odds with that. You have some that are very, very passionate, and it's not necessarily about like the money component, but you're able to kind of like balance, no, capital is just a means for me to get to my end goal of like wanting to help people, which I think is just like a really fascinating take to have, because it's very rare that like we'll talk to like founders where it's like leaning kind of both ways a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just start your next Shark Tank pitch with that story. And oh my gosh, from a storytelling yeah. perspective, you got investors. Like,
I'm out. Oh, yeah. That's another. I want to make money. Yeah, definitely. I don't know. The world needs our help for sure.
I'm just personally curious, do you have any sources of inspiration or other investors that maybe like you looked up to, or like folks that you like listen to that kind of like help you stay like motivated and like on track to like focusing on these goals?
In particular, I mean, Mark was definitely one of them growing mm-hmm. up. There's a lot of people, and they sort of cycle through the internet, that you've definitely heard the quote, like, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. I have found that when I detach from my broke college friends, my mind just goes into the clouds of great ideas and what's possible. But when I spend my time around people that are being drawn down and not doing anything with their life, no offense to my friends, I love them, but I then don't do anything with my life and I lose motivation. Right. So I think it's really important to flood my mind with a lot of good people. Mm. And to choose that in my time alone, which is a lot of time, to have the YouTube algorithm trained to just show me people who are really motivated and people who are crushing it. And there's definitely this other level of the world of there's the average person who's getting average results. And then there's great people who are really going for it. And the people who are across 100 million plus will all say the same thing. Like, get your butt out of bed, start doing the things, like, know what you need to do and go out and do it. Like, stop wasting your time, stop, you know, do all the different things that us humans do to just distract ourselves. So I think filling my mind with that, the people filter from time to time. I've definitely had a lot of inspiration from the most successful people. Elon's gotten super controversial, but what he's done is just like absolutely clinically insane in terms of taking something that's impossible and doing it. But there's lots of people on YouTube who are really inspired by, especially young people.
That's awesome.
It's kind of pissed me off too when people are like my age and they're beating me. It's like,
Is there any sneak peek that you can give us in terms of like what's next for either Vibride or for you, Charlie, as you're thinking about your future plans and things you want to work on?
Yeah, for Vibride, we've been working on electric scooters for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So we're releasing 3 really cool electric scooters.
Nice.
We've really put a lot of emphasis on making the rideability of them super good and not just having good power and range, but also something that's really comfortable. We're that's super so cool. excited to release those in about a month. Mm-hmm. And it's really a new chapter for us to go from just this skate brand to this big electric scooter company now. So
yeah,
we'll see how that works.
Who knows? Maybe rollerblades will be next after scooters too, if that gets back in yes. style again.
Yes. Yes. Yep, amazing.
Oh, I love that.
Electric rollerblades.
Let's go.
All right.
Cool. Thank you guys. You guys are really fun.
Thanks.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite.